Morning. Today's daf in Chulin Chavav. We are in the Mishnah Chavim at Beis. More contrasting. These are the final Mishnahs that we're going to be doing over the course of the sugya. Contrasting one halacha to another. Rashi notes that this Mishnah is slightly different than the previous Mishnahs. In fact, if you could just look immediately at Rashi, Hanami Lahachitanya. It's a funny place to start the daf, but it really just it highlights just a subtle difference in terms of what we're doing right now. Rashi writes. These Mishnahs coming up are similar to the ones that we had earlier. And up until now, what we were describing were contrasting two different mitzvahs, two different halachas, one to another. And where this one applies, this one does not apply, etc. But now, as we're going to be describing this Mishnah, we're going to be talking about one topic, one halacha, and which we're going to saying that at stages it applies, and at other stages it does not apply. And basically now, in these Mishnahs coming up, we're going to be describing where at one time this is going to be knowing, and another time this is not going to be knowing. Good. All right, so just a subtle difference in terms of these Mishnahs coming up for the end of the parak, which will be today's daf, as opposed to the previous Mishnahs where we were comparing two halachas one to another. Good. And over here...
Why do you have to say that? We can see it.
Okay, good. I do hear that. But Rashi just wants to make that clear. Okay, so our mission now is going to be covering the topic of Temed. Temed is basically a little bit of wine extract. What happens is after we produce the wine, so there are going to be dregs on the bottom of the wine, and we're going to take the dregs and we're going to put them in water. And what's going to end up happening is we're going to make wine a second time. Now, this wine obviously is going to be significantly diluted, but... halachically, it may in fact have the status of wine. Now, mind you, that it's the extract of dregs together with water, and so there will be a little bit of fermentation, and with that we'll have some version of wine. Now, halachically, it's really important to us to identify whether it's wine or whether it's water. In other words, is it flavored water or is it wine? And that's obviously very important. It'll affect many different halachas throughout Torah. And so we are going to be discussing in the course of this Mishnah what is going to be its status. Now, Hatemen Ashelo Hichmitz Eno Nikach Bekesef Meiser Uposos HaMikvah. And Mishe Hichmitz Nikach Bekesef Meiser Veno Posos HaMikvah. So over here, our Mishnah tells us the following. It's going to turn on before and after fermentation. Prior to fermentation, it's water. After fermentation, it's wine. And this is going to affect two halachas. The Mishnah tells us, first the halacha of Meiser, Meiser Sheni. We know the halacha is as follows. When you have Meiser Sheni that you took off in years 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the Shemitah cycle, so that's the second 10% that you're taking off. First 10% is Meiser Rishon given to the Levi. Second 10% is Meiser Sheni. What's done with Meiser Sheni is that you take it to Yerushalayim and eat it to Yerushalayim. Inconvenient at times. So what you do is you take the Meiser Sheni and you're poda it onto money. That money now has Kedushas Meiser Sheni. You go into Yerushalayim and you purchase with that anything that is delicious, right? B'chol asher tava nefshecha. Now, water is not delicious, and water has no caloric intake. Now, water obviously is very important. However, the halach is very clear. You can't buy water with Meiser Sheni money. It has to be a food that has caloric intake. So water is no good. If I remember correctly, mushrooms are no good. Okay, but outside of that, though, you could buy food. So can I purchase Temed? And the answer is very simple. When it has the status of water, the answer is no. When it has the status of wine, the answer is yes, and that's going to be before and after fermentation. Before fermentation, it's water, and therefore I can't use my Meiser Sheni money to buy Temed. After fermentation, I will be able to. That's halacha number one. Halacha number two is mikvah. We know that once the mikvah has 40 sa'ah, so whatever you pour into the mikvah afterwards is not going to affect the status of the mikvah whatsoever. However, we also know that if the mikvah is under 40 saw, and I take maim she'uvim, and I put in maim she'uvim, just 3 lugin of maim she'uvim, so that's going to be postos the mikvah. But what is going to be postos the mikvah? Only maim she'uvim. It has to be water. So that means to say that if I'm pouring any other juice into the mikvah, it's a strange-looking mikvah, but if I pour any juice into the mikvah, juice is not going to be postel, only water is going to be postel. Is our temed going to be postel the mikvah? And once again, it's the same point. Before fermentation, it's water, and therefore it is going to be posel as a mikvah. After fermentation, it's wine, and therefore it's not going to be posel as a mikvah. Good? That is the first part of the Mishnah, second half of the Mishnah. This is a Mishnah that we've heard already a number of times. We heard it back in Shkalim. We're going to hear it again in Bukharas. And right now, at the end of the first parak of Chulin, we get to hear the Mishnah again. Partnership between two brothers. A brother's inherited the estate of their father. And we are now talking about before the estate is divided versus after the estate is divided. If before the estate is divided, so what is this estate considered? It's considered money of the father. It is considered one, basically, I'll call it a corporation. Obviously, that's a modern term. But basically, it is still viewed as dad's money prior to the division of the estate. If, however, let's say the brothers divided the estate and then go and partnered up again, this is now considered the children's money, and it just happens to be that they created a partnership between the two of them with the estate that they inherited. And halachically, there's going to be two notable differences. One is the kablon requirement. We discussed this actually recently in the daf, and we get to discuss it again. Every time you give machzus a shekel, you also have to add a kablon. Why do you have to? A kablon is just a small amount of little pocket change that comes together with a machzus a shekel that you give. Why is the kablon given? So I'll just go with Rashi over here. In fact, Rashi, the last time we did this also in the daf, Rashi said the exact same thing. And that is that we want the machitzas shekel to make sure, we want to be sure that it's more than the weight of a half of a shekel. In other words, Rashi describes it with the words hechra. Hechra meaning that I wanted to tip the scale. So therefore what I do is I put the machitzas shekel coin on, okay, and that should now make the scale even between the coin that I put on and the counterbalance, which obviously weighs a half shekel. And then in order to tip the scale, so I add another kalbon on. So every time I give a machzus or shekel, I add a kalbon. The halacha is that if I'm giving on behalf of myself, I have to add a kalbon. If I'm giving on behalf of somebody else, I do not have to give a kalbon. And so, if the estate was divided between the brothers, so that means that when each one of them is giving a machzus or shekel, so whose money are they using? They're using their own money. Consequently, they have to add a kalbon. If, however, let's say they didn't divide the estate, so whose money now is it considered? It's considered the estate's money. I'll call it dad's money, but dad's no longer alive. But okay, but in other words, we'll call it the estate money. If you're giving it for the estate, then you don't have to add a kalbon because it's like you're giving on behalf of somebody else, and therefore there's no requirement to give a kalbon. Conversely, in terms of Maaser Behema, the halacha works in the other direction. For Maaser Behema, we know that in order to be chayiv in the halachas of Maaser Behema, all the animals that are born in your flock over the course of the year, so you take all those newborn animals, put them in the pen, count them out. Every 10th animal has the kedusha of Maaser Behema and is offered as a karban. This halacha of Maaser Behema only applies when there is a sole proprietor of that flock. If, however, that flock is owned by a partnership, is owned by any more than one person, two or more than that, so now you have a partnership and there is no mitzvah of Maaser Behema. Okay, Gzeiras HaKasav, Rashi quotes a drasha, good. So anyway, so reflexively now, these two halachas are working opposite one another. If the estate is divided by the brothers and then they join that back together, so vis-a-vis the kalbon, they're going to be chayiv in the kalbon. Vis-a-vis Maaser Behema, they're going to be pater for Maaser Behema. If, however, the estate was not divided amongst the brothers, so vis-a-vis kalbon, there will be pater from kalbon, but vis-a-vis Maaser Behema, since it's the estate's flock, so that's considered a sole proprietor, and therefore they'll be chayiv in Maaser Behema. So far, so good. Those are the halachas of the Mishnah. And again, all we're doing is just simply turning on a point of time. And in the case of Temed, we're turning on fermentation, before and after fermentation, and on the estate, we're turning on before and after the estate is divided amongst the brothers. We start with the Gemara. The Gemara is really going to be focused only on the first halachas of the Mishnah, and that is that of the Temed. Is the Temed wine, yes or no? And so the Mishnah says everything is turning on fermentation. And seemingly, according to our Mishnah, that is the only significant and critical determinant in terms of whether or not the Temed is or is not wine. The Gemara now notes that if you learn the Mishnayos and Truma, which in Maestros, which we're about to learn together right now, so you're going to note that the Mishnayos and Maestros seem to be focusing on a different aspect and on a different determinant. The Gemara starts off, Mani, Masisan la Rabbi Yehuda v'la Rabban, and Detanya. It's a Mishnah, so the correction on the side is that none. Our Mishnah does not seem to be going neither like Rabbi Yehuda nor like the Chachamim. The Mishnah reads as follows. Hamisamid v'nasa mayim b'mida u'matza k'dei midaso. So you are mitamed. Okay, that's the verb of temed. Temed is a product that's resulted, that's created. And mitamed is you're trying to create temed. So you take water and you're pouring it over dregs. So if, let's say, the dregs only produced flavor, but no actual physical content of the dregs went into the water. So the only thing that went in is just flavoring. So, and that means to say that the exact same amount of water that was poured in came out. So, pater, according to the Chachamim, so this is, when all said and done, water. It's got flavoring to it. It's wonderful. It's water, right? Right, like this, like the seltzers we buy in the store, right? They have nice flavorings, but when all said and done, it's seltzer. So over here, it's just water. Rav Yehuda Mechayev, and Rav Yehuda says no, that with the flavoring, so it is now considered wine, and therefore you be chayev in Trumas HaMaisers. So over here, seemingly, what we have over here is between the Chachamim and Rav Yehuda is a simple machlokus of whether or not flavoring is enough in order to qualify it as wine. According to the Chachamim, flavoring is not enough. You need actual dregs, actual content of the dreg to go into it in order to have the halachic status of wine. Masha Enkin, according to Rav Yehuda, as long as there's flavoring, that would be sufficient. Over here in this Mishnah, fermentation does not seem to be a critical factor at all. And so, our Mishnah is talking about fermentation being the critical moment, and meanwhile, the Mishnah Maestros is talking about flavoring, no flavoring, actual dreg content. Okay? So, Mani Ira, Banan Afa,
you could make Kiddush on that?
Well, let's right now just stay with the halachas of Trumas and Maestros. Okay, so I Rabbanan Avagav Dehichmitz. So according to the Chachamim, it doesn't seem to matter whether fermentation occurred or did not occur. Meaning, according to the Chachamim, if no content of the dregs went into the water and it was just flavoring, even with fermentation, seems to be the halachically it's water. And I Rabbi Yehuda Avagav Dehichmitz, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, as long as flavoring went in, it's considered wine. And it doesn't seem to matter in that Mishnah Maestros whether or not fermentation occurred or did not occur. And so what we have over here is confusion. Our Mishnah tells us that chimutz is the critical moment of determining whether it's wine or water. And meanwhile, the Mishnah in Maestros, which is giving us two opinions, seems to not at all take into consideration whether it is fermented or did not ferment. It's just a question of, is flavoring enough, Shitas Rav Yehuda, or do I need the actual content of the dregs to go into the water so that there's actually more substance? That's the Shita of the Chachamim. But fermentation, not seeming to be a factor. Am Rav Nachman, Am Rav Abba Ravua, B'kishehich mitzmach lokes, U'mastitzim Rav Yehuda. So Rav Nachman says, okay, I know that Mishnah Maestros, but I'm telling you right now, they're only debating post-fermentation. Prior to fermentation, there's no debate whatsoever. Prior to fermentation, it is water. Everyone is in agreement. And the only machlokas in that Mishnah Maestros is bishchehichmitz, is when fermentation occurred. Where now the shitas are, is that with fermentation, according to the Chachamim, that's not enough. You need fermentation and you need actual substance of the dregs to go into the water. Whereas according to Rav Yehuda, no. If there's flavoring and there's fermentation, that's going to be good enough. And our Mishnah, according to Rav Nachman, is reflecting the viewpoint of Rabbi Yehuda. Umasisim Rabbi Yehuda. V'chinam Rav Yosef Rabbi Chanina b'sheich mitzmach lokes. In fact, Rav Yosef Rabbi Chanina, when seeing that Mishnah, Maestros said the same exact point, that Mishnah in Maestros is only talking about post-chimutz, only after fermentation. But prior to fermentation, there's no debate whatsoever. Everyone is in agreement that that is water. The Amar of Nachman, Amar of Bravur, Temesh Shalachu Bekes of Meiser, Ulvasov Hichmitz, Kana Meiser. Another halacha as it relates to Temed. So again, now Temed is basically water with wine infused flavoring. So assuming that fermentation occurs, and assuming that we go like Rav Yehuda, if let's say when I purchased the Temed, it was prior to fermentation, and let's be clear, I'm purchasing it now with Meiser Sheni money. So it's really important to know whether it's water or wine, because I can't buy water with my Maaser Sheni money, I can only buy wine. So over here, I bought it before it fermented. I would have made the argument, well, not me personally, but one could make the argument that if I bought it before it fermented, so what did I do with the Maaser Sheni money? Nothing. Meaning that the money itself still has the Kedusha of Maaser Sheni. It's only going to get exchanged when you buy food with it. But if I'm not buying a food with it, if I'm just buying water, so then the money does not actually transfer. The Kedusha of the money is not transferring onto the water. The Chiddush of Rabbah Bar Avua is, well, no, that's not necessarily true. If, let's say, it's going to ferment, so then the Kedusha does in fact transfer. And the Gemara makes this point extraordinarily clear. So, because what we have over here is gilui milsa, meaning that the fermentation process is exactly just that. It's a process. As a process, that means to say that even though fermentation has not yet occurred, but we can easily see the process occurring. I don't mean visibly. I mean that, in other words, that's simply the way fermentation works over the course of time. Even though I purchased it before it actually ferments, but fermentation is inevitable. Now, the way Rashi explains the Gemara over here goes like this. Either fermentation is or is not going to happen. It's really binary. It's one of those two options. If fermentation is not going to happen, it's never going to happen. If fermentation is going to happen, so it's inevitable. So over here, if fermentation did occur, that means that it always was planning on doing so. So that means to say that when I bought it in its water state, in its pre-fermentation state, but if fermentation occurred, that means that it was always going to happen. It's never in a state of suffix of it may or may not happen. It either will or it won't. Okay. And so therefore, when it does, that means that we can go back retroactively and say, okay, even though I bought it pre-fermented, but nevertheless, the fermentation was inevitable, and therefore, we could view the Maaser Sheni being nifter from the money onto the tema that you purchased.
It was water.
Understood. Understood. It's a chiddush. It absolutely is a chiddush.
How do you know that it will ferment?
You
assume? Because it's at the end of the ferment. It's obvious it was fermenting already.
It's
starting to ferment.
Okay, so let me just so what you're asking is basically going to be the Gemara's next question, which is, well, how did you learn that in our Mishnah? So the Gemara says, well, what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah is saying that you have to actually wait to fermentation. Wait till fermentation? Well, what do you mean? With the way we're describing it, fermentation, if it's going to occur, will absolutely occur. And if it's not going to occur, it's not going to occur. But in other words, those are really our two choices. And our Mishnah is basically saying, wait till fermentation? Well, why do I need to wait? So, and as Rashi over here points out, the majority of the time what's going to end up happening is that it will ferment. So over here, so what are we waiting for? So Amar Rabba, kishashir mimena bekos, velo hichmitz. So Rabba says that our Mishnah is talking about a really limited circumstance, really limited, where what I did is I purchased a temed, but what the seller did is that when he sold the temed, so he retained just a little cup of by him, a sampling of it. And interesting, the way Rashi describes the Gemara over here. If he sold the entirety of it, so you can assume, like most Tamid, it's going to ferment. And so therefore, even though it was sold in its pre-fermented state, nevertheless, the sale is going to be a valid sale. Masha Enkin, however, if he kept a cup with him, because now he kept a cup with him, and now he has the ability to clarify whether or not this is or is not going to ferment, even though Rove, the majority of the time, it's going to ferment, but because now it's open to clarification, so therefore, you wait and see if, in fact, it's going to ferment. Okay. What we have in front of us right now is so far one explanation of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that if, in fact, you bought the water in its pre-fermented state, it's no good. If you bought it after it fermented, it is going to be good. The question on the table is that what we just learned together is that, generally speaking, when you're buying water that was soaked in dregs, so it will, in fact, ferment. In fact, we just learned together that if I buy it in its pre-fermented state, the transfer of Kedusha from the Maaser Sheni onto the quote-unquote water is going to work because fermentation is, in fact, inevitable. And most of the times it will ferment. Sometimes it won't, but most of the time it will. And If in fact it does, you could say it as Gilui Milsa L'Mafreya, that in fact it worked. To which now the Gemara now notes, that's one way to learn the Gemara. Rav Amar Hamani Rav Yochan Ben Nuri. Rav gives a different explanation. Meaning, Rav explains that our Mishnah is talking about either fermentation occurring or not occurring, is going according to the viewpoint of Rav Yochan Ben Nuri did not. Here we learn together a Mishnah. We saw this back in Makos. It's a Mishnah Mikvos. Gimel ilugim mayim chaser kortav, shenafal asochen kortav yayin, umarein kamar yayin, venafal lemekva lo pasuhu. Gimel ilugim mayim chaser kortav, shenafal asochen kortav chalav, umarein kamar yayin, venafal lemekva lo pasuhu. So first we start with the opinion of the Tanakhama, and that's as follows. Again, we go back to halacha where I introduced earlier this morning. For a mikvah to be kasher mikvah, you need 40 sa of water. Once there's 40 sa of water, the mikvah is good, the mikvah will always be good. Throw whatever you want into the mikvah after that point in time, and the mikvah is not going to become disqualified. However, if the mikvah is less than 40 sa, and then you put in gimel lugim mayim she'uvim, just three lug of mayim she'uvim into the mikvah, so three lugin of water that was put into a kli, that then subsequently went into the mikvah, that's going to post on the mikvah, that will disqualify the mikvah. According to the Tanakhama, it has to be three lugin of water, and meaning water to the exclusion of any other liquid. If, let's say, that three lugin is a mixture of water and any other liquid, be it wine, be it milk, it doesn't matter. If you don't have three lugin of just water, so it will not be posel the mikvah. Good? That's the opinion of the Tanakhama. And Rav Yochan Ben Nuri says, I disagree. Rav Yochan Ben Nuri Omer, Akol Holech Achar Mare. So, Rav Yochan Ben Nuri says, no, I disagree. What becomes critical is its appearance. Meaning, when I pour, and I have three lugin of Maim She'uvim, and before I got to three lugin, I just pour in other words, it's just short, just a little bit of three lugin, and to supplement to get it to three lugin, I pour in a little bit of wine. Now what happens is discoloration. In other words, we're assuming red wine. So what's occurring right now is discoloration. And now it looks red, it looks like wine. According to Rav Yochan Ben Nuri, what I have in front of me now is no longer mayim. It is now wine. As such, when now that goes into the mikvah, it's not going to be posel the mikvah. Masha ein kein. If let's say instead of wine being the supplemental liquid to get me to gimel lugin, I pour in milk. Now I know milk is a little, right, has a, but basically it is white in nature. It's not going to discolor the water. And so therefore, if I pour in the milk into it, it's not going to discolor the water. The water is now going to look like water, and therefore it is considered mayim she'uvim, and therefore it's going to be posel the mikvah. What do you get from this according to Rav Yochan Ben Nuri? So appearances. Appearances now becomes critical.
Once it doesn't posel, the wood is mashed. Let's say it looks like wine, and it's missing the three lugin, the mikvah. Does it mashed, or is it just not posel?
It's a good question. I'm not sure. So lav amar Rav Yochan baser chazusa aslinan, hachanam izo baser chazusa v'taima, v'chazusa dahai mayaninu. So what do you see that according to Rav Yochan Ben Nuri, so appearances are critical. Mm-hmm. Over here, in determining whether it is temed, is going to be wine, or is it going to be water, so therefore what I'm going to have to determine, in terms of the determination, is going to be both appearance and taste. Why both appearance and taste? So let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Hachanami detemed ad shelo hichmitz, afa pisha asid lahachmitz, v'hashta perehu, ho v'chazusa maya, paso mikvah, v'eino nikach, v'rav nachman karabanan. And as far as Rav Nachman is concerned, so he's going to be going like the Chachamim. The afa gav v'chazusa maya lo paso. Where even though its appearance is water, so it's not going to disqualify the tar debinan, lifso mikvah. Because in order to disqualify the mikvah, I need two factors. Shi'ura v'chazusa. Only in Meiser nikach the aperi kapit rachmana v'haperihu. Now, as far as being able to purchase it with your Meiser sheni money, it is in fact considered a pre. V'achlo bar tarte. Okay. The Rashi, however, goes on to describe another pshat in the Gemara. But anyway, for our purposes right now, good. So that is another way to explain the shita of our Mishnah. Okay, Upligi de Rabbi Elazar. Back to the Gemara. Our Gemara now notes that the position of Rav Nachman, that the Mishnah in Maisros, remember, the Mishnah Maisros that we learned earlier this morning tells us that what is critical in terms of determining whether it's water or whether it's temed? So according to the Chachamim, simply taste. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, you need actual... No, I'm sorry. According to the Chachamim, let me say that correctly. According to the Chachamim, you need substance. You need the actual dregs to go into the water. So in other words, it's not just simply the extract, the taste coming out of the dregs, but you need the actual dregs themselves. Masha'enkin, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you just simply need taste. The problem, as we noted already once earlier, and we're going to just review again, is that in that Mishnah Maisros, chimus does not seem to be a factor whatsoever. Meanwhile, our Mishnah tells us what distinguishes between what is halachically water versus halachically wine as it relates to temed, chimus, fermentation. And so our first approach of the morning has been Rav Nachman's approach, which is, no, the Mishnah Maisros is talking about where fermentation already occurred, and our Mishnah over here is going like the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, not like the Shita of the Chachamim. Because according to the Chachamim, even though there's taste and even though there's fermentation, that's not enough. You need taste, you need fermentation, and you need actual substance of the dregs. Fine. Our Mishnah is not going like the Chachamim according to Rav Nachman. I know that's a mouthful, but that's what we've seen so far this morning. Along comes Rabbi Elazar and says, a different pshat. Amar Rabbi Elazar kol modim shein mafrish nolab mimakom acher, ela im kein hichmitz. So, everyone's in agreement, meaning that Mishnah Masros, everyone would be in agreement that what you cannot do is take off Trumas and Maestros from another wine solution, unless fermentation occurs. Now, kasavar b'lo hichmitz machlokis, meaning that he, Rav Elazar, is of the opinion that the entire debate that exists in that Mishnah in Masros is talking about before it ferments, not after it ferments. And before it ferments, even though Rav Yehuda considers it to be wine, nevertheless, Trumos and Masros can only be taken off by it itself, by the solution itself, but by no other solution. Why? Because let's consider a point that we made earlier this morning, and let's say it again. If before it ferments, so is it in fact wine? The answer is maybe. I know that sounds funny, but maybe. Meaning because it may or it may not ferment. Now, earlier this morning, the way we described it is that the majority of it does ferment. The majority of times it does in fact ferment. But right now, at this point in time, we're not sure. And because of our uncertainty, if I took off Trumas or Maestros from the solution itself, so great. It may or may not be Chayav and Trumas or Maestros, but that's fine. That which I took off as Trumas or Maestros is coming from it itself. However, if I go ahead and take off Trumas or Maestros from another solution that is definitely Chayav and Trumas or Maestros, so then what we're doing is we're taking off Trumas or Maestros min achiv al ha-patur, from something which is obligated to something which may... I'll use the word may not be obligated right now. That's no good. Conversely, Rashi points out, the opposite also may have happened. Meaning, this may undergo fermentation, and the other temed may not have undergone fermentation, and so therefore what I'm doing is taking off Trumas and Maestros min ha-patur al achiv. In either way, you lose. Meaning you have not successfully taken off Trumas and Maestros. So therefore, even according to Rav Yehuda, who prior to fermentation says, yes, it's wine, but even at that point, you can't take off Trumas or Maestros from another solution onto this solution, only from this solution in of itself. Clearly, Rav Elazar is teaching us that Mishnah and Maestros, the machlokes between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim, is talking about prior to fermentation. This is opposed to the viewpoint of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman said that prior to fermentation, everyone's in agreement, it's water. The machlokes is only after fermentation in terms of whether or not it's wine. According to Rav Yehuda, it is. And according to the Chachamim, only when it has substance of the dregs going into the solution. Okay. So, Gemara is just simply pointing out that Rav Elazar and Rav Nachman are looking at the same Mishnah, but are not understanding the parameters of the machlokes in the same manner. Tana Rabbanan.
According to Rav Elazar, the Mishnah does not come out.
Ah, right. And, oh, very good. Right. Excellent. And that means to say now that according to Rav Elazar, how would you explain our Mishnah? So, the Gemara doesn't finish that thought. Meaning, in Achinami, he's not going to be able to learn it like Rav Nachman learned it. Okay, very good. Tana Rabbanan. Hatemen Ashalo Hechmitz, so Meshiko B'mayim. Meshihechmitz and Meshiko B'mayim. To appreciate and understand the Salacha, a little bit of background over here. Something becomes Tameh. A person or a Keli becomes Tameh, no problem, just dunk it into the mikvah, it comes out, it's Tahor. And that's true for a person, that's true for any Kli. However, food, once it becomes Tameh, game over. The story is over. There is no way to be Matar that food. Now, it's not the end of the world if it's Chulin, so eat it. And if it's Truma, then dispose of it. So for Truma, by the way, it's the end of the world. But in other words, for Truma, dispose of it. Actually, if it's oil, so you could use it for illumination. But in other words, okay, food cannot become tahor in a mikvah. So that's true for all food except water. Water can become tahor in the mikvah. Now, I know that's a neat trick, right? In other words, if you have water, it becomes tamei. So just simply dunk it into the mikvah and then take it out. Okay. Yeah, right. Okay, everyone understand? That's a bit of a challenge. What you do is a process called hashaka. In other words, if the water becomes tamei, so you have the water in a bowl, and you take that bowl and you submerge into the water, where there's an ishika, there's contact now between the water in the mikvah and the water that's in the bowl. Now, granted, by the way, that under most circumstances, you're probably not going to want to drink the water that was dunked in the mikvah. I understand that there's a hygienic issue, but right now I'm not interested in the hygienic issue. My interest right now is in the halachic issue, and that water can, in fact, be toveled in the mikvah. How does this work exactly? So Rashi over here explains. Rashi says it's basically a function of Zriya. Rashi says, let's explain it this way. And I'm basically saying over Rashi. Let's say you have seeds of a fruit that are tummy and they're truma. So that means to say now that what can you do with it? So actually, if you took the seeds and you plant them into the ground and you have new growth that grows out of it, so is that new growth going to be tummy? Of course not. Meaning it's a totally new entity. By being planted into the ground, decomposition, and new growth coming out of it, so now what you have with that new growth is you have a totally new item. Same thing with the water. When the water goes into the mikvah, in the way I just described with the neshika, when the water goes into the mikvah, it's basically analogous to taking the seeds and planting them into the ground. It only works with water because water loses its identity in the mikvah because min v'mino. It's the same item. If I took any other liquid and I poured it into the water, so it does not receive this status of becoming batel to the water. That's the way Rashi explains it. Good. So now our temed, which is tameh, can I tovel it in the mikvah and it becoming tahor? So once again, the Mishnah says, well, it depends whether it's water, whether it's wine. If halachically water, yes. If it's halachically wine, then no. And again, the Bryce over here, much like our Mishnah says, what's all this going to turn on? Fermentation, chimutz. Prior to chimutz, it's water. Post chimutz, it's wine. That's what so prior to chimutz, you could tovel in the water. Post chimitz, you cannot tov in the water. So, I'm a revolution of Ella.
You have a problem because it could be chimitz later on.
Right. Good. I was thinking the same thing also. I didn't say it, but I was thinking it. So, I'm a revolution of Ella. Shetim do b'mayim tarim v'nitmu aval tameim ikara lo. Rava wants to try to make the following distinction. I hear you, but that's only if you put in the Mayim Tahorim into the Temed, and then it subsequently becomes Tameh. However, if let's say after the solution was made, then it becomes Tameh, so he would like to argue that no, Hashaka would not work in that circumstance, even though it's prior to fermentation. Now, it's hard to understand why that should be. In fact, it's so hard to understand, the Gemara is going to really struggle. Azar Rav Gaviyah Mebek, still Amar L'Shamayit to come into Rav Ashi, Maishna Tameh Mikar Dalo. Now, you're saying that if it was Tameh Mikara, it won't work. Why? Because I think this is what your thought process is. Your thought process is, well, look, let's compare now the density of water to that of the fruit or the fruit extract. And the water is actually denser than the fruit extract. Okay. And what you're thinking now is that when I am making my Temed solution, so that means to say that the water now, which is denser, is going to stay on the bottom, and that whatever wine extract is coming out of the dregs is going to be floating on top. And you think now, when you're doing Hashaka, and you are now creating a neshika, a contact, between the liquid that's on the top of the bowl and the mikvah water, well, that's not water on the top of the bowl. That's just grape extract. And so therefore, you're not actually creating hashaka between the water and the water of the mikvah. To which the Gemara says, I really don't buy that. I have a very difficult time with that. So we achitarim lufsof net munami. Well, if you're right, so when the water went in the state of Tahara, and then after that, it becomes Tame, aren't we going to be making the same exact point? Meaning, if it really is a question of density and a separation of the water and the dreg extract, so then, even if it becomes Tahar beforehand, but we should have basically the same phenomena of separation of the less dense dregs, or the dreg extract, and the more dense water, and even if I'm trying to do hashaka then, I'm only creating hashaka with the dreg extract and not the water. To which the Gemara basically says, I really don't hear that distinction. Why not? Ella mevavale, hachanami mevavale. Because it's not like oil and vinegar. Oil and vinegar, if you leave it alone, really does separate and really creates two separate liquids. But over here, however, it's not true. You don't really have this kind of full separation. There may be a difference in densities, maybe. But in other words, there is going to be a diffusion and a combination of the two. And so therefore, when I'm doing hashaka, there is in fact water on the top of the bowl, and hashaka actually does occur. Okay. That kind of takes us to the end of our first sugya today, and admittedly, that was difficult. A lot of moving parts to that, right? The Mishnah here in Chulin versus the Mishnah in Maestros, trying to create a synthesis between the two Mishnayos, various opinions amongst the Amorayim, Rav Elazar versus Rav Nachman in terms of how to create agreement between our Mishnah and the Mishnah Maestros, and admittedly, that was a difficult sugya. Continuing now in the Mishnah from here until the end of the Perek, so basically we're going to be all over the place in Shas, covering different topics, but again, with the one theme being that at one time this halacha applies, and at another period of time that halacha does not apply, but this halacha does apply. And the contrasting halachas that apply towards various periods of time, and here we talk about a young lady who's going from before bas mitzvah to becoming bas mitzvah. So we know that according to the Torah, the father has the right to sell his daughter. I know it doesn't speak to, you know, it doesn't speak to our sensibilities in, you know, today's day and age, but back in the day, it was a way of protecting the girl. The girl was going to be now taken care of by that family. She probably, the Torah describes it in the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim. The Torah describes where hopefully she'll marry either the father or the son of the family. In other words, and so basically it's a way of protecting her. And this is what's called Mechira. The father has the right to sell the daughter up until she's bas mitzvah. Once she's bas mitzvah and she now moves from being a ketana to a nara, so no longer does the father have the right to sell her. That's what's called Mechir. Another halacha of kenas. The halacha of kenas is that rachmanis, if a woman is violated, so it's chavala, and in other words, you of course have to pay all the damages of chavala. It's assault. It's halachically it's assault. But on top of that, also, if she's a nara and her besulim was broken, so there's also going to be a kenas to be paid. What age is she eligible to receive the kenas? So the answer is, it's the beginning of the third parak of Ksuvos, is that when she's a nara. When she's a nara and when she's a katana, or just when she's a nara. So as we'll learn in just a moment, the opinion of Reb Meir is only when she's a nara, not when she's a katana, is she eligible for the kenas. Just to be clear, if she was a katana, of course it's still chavala, it's still an assault, and she would be chayv to all the tashlumi chavala, as articulated in the beginning of the eighth parak of Baba Kama, but in terms of the additional kenas, according to Reb Meir, it's only when she's a nara, not when she's a katana. Our Mishnah tells us, and so basically now everything's going to turn when she becomes bas mitzvah. Prior to that point in time, so the father had the right to sell her, that's mechira, but she was not eligible to kenas. After that point in time, when she turns 12, now there's no longer a right for the father to sell her as an ama ivria, but in the event that she was ne'enas, so then she would be subject to receiving kenas. And again, just parenthetically, technically speaking, the recipient of the actual kenas money is going to be the father under most circumstances. But anyway, not for now. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Zu, Devar Rabbi Meir, V'chacham Amamin, Yeshmiya. I jumped ahead to the next sugya. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Zu, Devar Rabbi Meir, V'chacham Amamin, Yeshkenas B'makom Mecher D'Tanya. And now the Gemara just simply notes that our Mishnah is espousing the viewpoint of Rav Meir, but the Chachamim don't agree, and that is that according to the Chachamim, even a ketana is eligible to receive kenas. Ketana mi bas yom echad ad shetavi beis aris yesh la mecher vein la kenas mi shetavi beis aris ash yiz bager yesh la kenas vein la mecher divrei Rav Meir. According to Rav Meir, so there is in fact kenas when there's no mecher and mecher when there's no kenas, just like we learned on Mishnah. Shehayer Rabbi Meir Amar kamakum sheish mecher and kenas v'chamakum sheish kenas ne mecher. Exactly what we learned like in our Mishnah. But that's not the halacha. The halacha goes like the chachamim. Chachamim amrim ketan mi bas kimoshan mi yamecher ad sheis bager yesh la kenas kenas in mecher lo ema af kenas b'makom mecher. According to the chachamim, when she's 3 years of age, where now she is a bas bia, she is the bia that she has now halachically is significant. The besulin that was ruptured during the ones is not going to come back, and so as a result of that, she is eligible, she's entitled to receive a kenas. According to the Chachamim, obviously that's not in accordance with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is going like Rav Meir, fine. Our Mishnah is not going like the Chachamim. Okay, Adkan, that takes us through our one halacha. Another halacha that is going to be dependent on developmental stages of a woman is going to be the contrast between Miyun and Chalitza. Let me just quickly introduce each of these halachas. First, the halacha of Chalitza. That's the easier one to explain. Chalitza, in the event that a woman is married and her husband dies and she's left childless and she has a brother-in-law, her late husband's brother now has a mitzvah opportunity of yibum. If he chooses not to do the mitzvah of yibum, so then she can only be released with a chalitza. A chalitza is a process in which her zika will be broken. Her connection to her brother-in-law will be broken. Chalitza can only be done if she is an adult. Up until that point in time, chalitza cannot be done. So in the event that she got married before she is an adult, which that could happen, so, and let's say now there is a zika, so then she's going to have to wait till she becomes an adult in order for chalitza to be done. Good. That's the halacha of the mitzvah and the halacha of chalitza. What is miyun? Miyun is a little bit more complicated. Miyun is in the event that a woman is married off either by her mother or by her brother. Min HaTorah, they do not have the right to marry her off. Min HaTorah, a girl below the age of 12 can only be married off by her father. That marriage that is created by her father is a Torah marriage. It's recognized by the Torah. Even though she's a ketana, she is a married woman. Good. And the only way that marriage can be terminated in one of two ways, death or divorce. Death of her husband, or he divorces her. And that's it. And in terms of how exactly she receives the divorce, Gemara and Gittin, not for us, not for now. If, however, let's say there is no father in the scene, and now the Chachamim afforded the right for either her mother or her brother to marry her off. Again, marriage back in the day was a way to protect a very young woman. So the Chachamim allowed either the mother or the brother to marry her off. But this is not a kiddushin daraisa, meaning she does not have das, so she cannot get married on her own. She does not have her father. Her father was able to marry her off, was given the Torah right to marry her off, but he's not in the picture. So under those circumstances, the Chachamim gave the right for either her mother or brother to marry her off, but this is a kiddushin darabanan. This is the one circumstance where she can annul the marriage. If, let's say, at 12 years of age, she says, thank you, but no thank you. So she can, in fact, annul the marriage. Even though she was with her husband, she was intimate with her husband, nevertheless, she has the ability to annul the marriage. The marriage, to begin with, was only a din d'rabbanan, and the Chachamim gave her the right to annul it. Up until what point in time, that's where the machlokas ensues. Where it is not universally accepted when miyun can occur. When can she refuse? The word miyun, by the way, lama'ein, means refusal. When can she turn down the marriage? So our Mishnah weighs in on this very topic. So our Mishnah says that when chalitza kicks in, that's when miyun no longer is around. When miyun was an option, there is no opportunity, no possibility of chalitza. Again, let's just keep everything in line. We're not talking about the same girl. We're just simply saying that when she gets to one stage of development, so there one girl could do this, one girl cannot do that. When she gets to the next stage of development, the contrast. And so, Amrav Yura Amarav Zu Devar Rabbi Meir V'Chacham Amarim Yeshmim B'Makom Chalitza D'Tanya. And as I just pointed out, and now the Gemara is going to spell it out. Up until what point in time can a woman be Mema'ein, her rabbinically induced marriage? It's a machlokas. The Gemara quotes the Braisa. Arma Sayabas Mema'ein Esat Shadavi Shtei Saras Devar Rabbi Meir. So once again, Shitas Rabbi Meir is that Miyun only goes up until 12 years of age. At Bas Mitzvah, she no longer has an ability to be Mema'ein. However, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ashi Yarbeh Shchor Al Halavan. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it comes at a later developmental stage. He describes it as further physical maturation of the girl. Exactly when that is, you could see Rashi for more of a description of when that is. But in other words, at a later physical point, developmentally, she can do Mian. So that means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, she has not till Bas Mitzvah, but a little bit after Bas Mitzvah, in which she could do Mian. So there is going to be overlap in terms of the Mian possibility and Chalitza. So our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Yehuda. And finally, last Mishnah of the Perek. Kol makom sheyesh tkiya ein havdala, v'chol makom sheyesh havdala ein tkiya. An Erev Shabbos is an Erev Yom Tov. You take a look at that first Rashi in the Mishnah. An Erev Shabbos is an Erev Yom Tov. So they would make an announcement to the people, it is time to stop working. And so, lahavtil es ha'amin ha'malachu ben ha'shmashas token lahavdol ben kosh l'chol. Interesting Rashi, by the way, he describes the tkiya being done ben ha'shmashas. Okay, I know. It really is an interesting Rashi. That is Tekiya. Havdalah, we're all familiar. Havdalah, b'tfilah v'alakos b'motzei Shabbos v'yom tov, Rashi says. So our Mishnah now is telling us that when there is Tekiya, there is no Havdalah. And when there is Havdalah, there is no Tekiya. And these are going to be mutually exclusive. So, and that means to say that even though we are headed from a day of Shabbos to a day Yom Tov, so they're still going to be remaining mutually exclusive from one another. The Mishnah goes on to explain. Yom Tov Shechalios Be'er Shabbos. So let's say we're going now from Yom Tov into Shabbos. So Yom Tov into Shabbos, so what do we have over here? An increase of Kedusha. On Yom Tov, you can do some malacha, cooking malacha. On Shabbos, obviously, you can do no malacha. So Yom Tov Shechalios Be'er Shabbos. So let's say Yom Tov is a Friday and we're going into Shabbos. Token v'lo mavdilin. So we are going to be doing tkiya in order to tell people to stop doing malachas ochal nefesh. Obviously, there's no havdalah because we don't have to make a separation in the kedusha. We're going up in kedusha. We're not going down in kedusha. B'motzei Shabbos mavdilin v'lo token. If let's say, however, Yom Tov is on a motzei Shabbos, so now we're heading from Shabbos to a lesser kedusha of Yom Tov. So just the opposite. There's not going to be a tekiya because we don't have to tell people to stop doing malacha. In fact, just the opposite. There's now an allowance to do malacha going from Shabbos into Yom Tov, and so therefore, havdalah. Ketzam havdalah. Now, what exactly is a nusach havdalah when you're going from Shabbos into Yom Tov? So I'm havdalah mikosh l'kodesh. So we've done this. It happens with, you know, not perfect regularity, but it happens pretty often. We're going from Shabbos into Yom Tov. So the nusach is going to be from kodesh to kodesh. Meaning, generally, when we go from a Shabbos into a weekday, it's Minhag Kodesh L'Chol, right? But over here, you're going from one day of Kedusha to a lesser day of Kedusha. So you simply say, Ben Kodesh L'Kodesh. Now, Rabbi Dosa Omer, Ben Kodesh Chamor L'Kodesh HaKal. Rabbi Dosa says he doesn't like that Nusach because of its ambiguity. In other words, you're just simply saying Kodesh to Kodesh. How is the listener going to know that we're going from higher to lesser Kedusha? So according to Rabbi Dosa, you have to make that point very clear. He actually incorporates that as part of the Nusach. Okay. Now, when you're going from Yom Tov to Shabbos, so how exactly is Tekiya done? The Gemara wants to know exactly that question. Hechatokeya. The Rashi points out over here, the first Rashi on the Gemara. B'yom Tov Shabbos Shabbos Kishu Tokeya Lahavdol Mikosh L'Chol D'Bai Shinui Mishar Arvei Shabbosos. Meaning, we want people to know that this is not going to be your typical Erev Shabbos Tekiya. Sherei Ein Kedusha Nechneses Chamur Mikedusha D'Yotze Kol Kach. Because we are not making such a transition from one Kedusha to another. When I'm going from weekday to Shabbos, we're making a major transition to where Malacha was totally permitted, to where Malacha is totally prohibited, Over here, however, when going from Yantav to Shabbos, so we want to make a pronouncement, a clear differentiation, that this is not exactly the same. What do we do? So what you do is a slightly different type of tekiah, where you're going to blow with a tekiah, a long blast, with a trua mitoch hatekiah. Before you finish the tekiah, so you do a broken sound at the end. Not to be confused with the halachas of shofar, meaning those are obviously, it's a separate blowing, it's a separate mitzvah, but basically it's like shvarim trua, right, with the benishima achas or shtei neshimas. Okay, it's not a great comparison. I don't love it because it's not the same. Anyway, basically you transition seamlessly from your tekiah to a broken sound. Rav Asi amar tekiah umeria benishima achas. Now, according to Rav Asi, it's slightly different. You do so benishima achas, but as Rashi explains over here, and that's why I didn't like the analogy. In other words, the way Rashi explains it over here, neshima achas, with a pause in the middle. In other words, you go tekiah and you go into a broken sound, but you pause in the middle. We don't have the minhag of blowing shofar from weekday into Shabbos. I know in some communities, Yerushalayim, all right, Muncie. I know in some communities they do blow sirens. So, but in other words, we don't have this minhag. So for us, I think we don't really understand the subtleties of we go tekiah immediately into a broken sound. Tekiah pause go into a broken sound. Meaning a lot of this just simply doesn't speak to us because we don't really speak these subtleties. Anyway, itkin Rav Asi behutzal kishmaite. Now Rav Asi in Hutzal, in the town of Hutzal, right? That's one of the northern towns. So he instituted, like he himself said, so the Braisa says that when I have Yom Tov that comes out in Erev Shabbos, so I do tekiah and I don't do trua. So only the long sound, but not a broken sound. So my love, lo mirin klal, l'chora, what it means is no trua whatsoever, lo. Rav Yudah matars l'tame, Rav Asa matars l'tame. And over here, each one of the Amorayim will have an easy time explaining the Braisa. Rav Yudah matars l'tame, lo mirin b'fnei atzma, lo mitoch tekiah. It just simply means that there's no trua as an independent blast, but rather as part of the tekiah. And Rav Asi mitaros l'tamei v'lamirim v'shtei neshima sal b'neshima achas. In other words, you don't do it in two breaths, you do it in one breath, but still in that one breath, it's going to be tekiah with a short pause, but in the same breath, and then you're going to do a trua. Uvimotzei Shabbos hecha amar la. So where exactly is this stated? Meaning, when Yontov comes out on a Motzei Shabbos, so where exactly do you say Ben Kodesh LaKodesh? In other words, as we know, in the bracha of Avdala, so there's a beginning portion of the bracha, and then there's a chasima, right? Baruch Atah Hashem Hamavda Ben Kodesh L'Chol. But when I'm transitioning from Shabbos into Yontov, so Hamavda Ben Kodesh L'Kodesh, or at least that's what the Mishnah said. What the Gemara now wants to know is that when we are replacing the word Chol with Kodesh, are we doing that in the first part of the Berachas Avdala? Are we doing it at the chasima, at the concluding bracha? Am Rav Yudah bechasima sa, v'chein am Rav Nachman bechasima sa. So the Amoraim, Rav Yudah, and Rav Nachman say that it's done in the chasima. But in the psicha, what we do is we say, ben kodesh l'chol. Meaning in the opening part of the bracha, you're just simply noting distinctions. In other words, different levels of kedusha. It's only when you get to the chasima are you now noting that, hey, we're moving from Shabbos to Yontov. So therefore, we're saying Ben Kodesh LaKodesh. And Rashi, by the way, notes that's our minug. Rashi's braider of Idi Amarav B'psichasav Leisachasakav Asay. There is an Amara that actually said Ben Kodesh LaKodesh both in the Chasima and in the Psicha. The Gemara says, and by the way, that's not the halacha. Rabbi Dosa Amar Ben Kodesh Chamor LaKodesh Akal Leisachasakav Asay. And immediately, the Gemara just tells us that the halacha does not follow like Rabbi Dosa of our Mishnah. Amar Avzer Yom Tov Shachalios B'Amtsa Shabbos. Amar Amavda Ben Kodesh LaKodesh. So, Yom Tov that falls out in the middle of the week. So, you say at the end of Yom Tov Now that's a little bit strange because it's not Shabbos, right? Shabbos was either 2 days ago, 3 days ago, what have you. In other words, it's not Shabbos. And meanwhile, as part of the Nusach of Avdallah, you still stay Ben Yom HaShulish HaShemei HaMaseh. So my time, and the reason why is very simple, says the Gemara. Because Seder Avdallah Sumona. Because you are, all you're doing in Havdalah, I mean, not all you're doing, but the theme of Havdalah is contrast. In other words, there's light, there's dark, right? The there's Shabbos and the other days of the week. Just noting that things are different. So over here, even though you're making Havdalah Motzei Yontov, and even if Motzei Yontov is coming out in the middle of the week, it's still appropriate to say Bein Chol LeShabbos, because we're just noting that there are distinctions. Just like what we're doing right now, making a distinction between Yontov and Chol. And needless to say, that's in fact the halacha. Hadron halacha kol shochtin, that's the end of the first parak of our Masechta. And tomorrow morning, we start with the second parak, and we begin with, once again, we're back to the halacha of Shechita. Halacha of Shechita are going to be covering us for the first two parakim of the Masechta. So we have one more parak in which we're going to be doing Hilcha Shechita. And then, third parak begins. And when that occurs, when that event occurs, Daf Mem around Daf Mem, close, Mem Beis. And when the third parak occurs, get comfortable. Third parak, one of the longest parakim Daf wise in all Shas.